Hey there. Welcome to the fourth episode of our podcast, Short Circuit. We're so sorry that it's taken us over a month to get another one of these out, but we promise that we've been really busy with important journalism projects in the GTA. We'll get to that in a minute. Today, we're going to be talking about the Ontario provincial election and how Dougie did it again.
For those of you joining us for the first time, Kevin and I are journalists working at The Hoser, a new independent media outlet. We work in the Greater Toronto Area covering all types of stories. This podcast, Short Circuit, focuses on housing, labor, and food injustice. Be sure to check out our first couple of episodes where we spoke to folks on the front lines of struggles against food insecurity, homelessness, and labor struggles.
Short Circuit is a proud member of the Harbinger Media Network. You can find other great independent podcasts there, including Newfoundland's own Paris Marx on Tech Won't Save Us, where he cuts through the hyperbole, offering critical analysis on modern tech issues. If you like Short Circuit and our other journalism, please consider supporting us at patreon.com/thehosermedia.
Our music was created by Alex from House of Decline, and the episode was produced by Eric Wickham of Big Shiny Takes. You can find their work wherever you listen to your podcasts. All right, let's do this. So what have we been up to, Kevin?
Well, Shannon, we started a newsletter. As a lot of listeners, people that maybe work in the industry or are familiar with newsletters in general, it's a really, really good way to get new people on board to the type of work that we're doing. Like, a lot of the people that we access through our digital reporting are not necessarily the exact same people that we're getting to sign up for our newsletter. And our open rates have been really great. People are excited about the stories. We've also launched TikTok, which I honestly was a little bit skeptical about. And we've had a lot of success on it already. For both of those things, you can go sign up. If you go on our website, we now have a pop-up that like prompts you to sign up on our website, which is pretty exciting. It looks great. So you can sign up there for our newsletter. And with TikTok, it's just like the rest of social media, right? Jump on there, give us a follow, comment on our stuff, like our stuff, send us a message maybe if there's a question you have or a story idea. But yeah, we'd love to see you over there.
We're called The Hoser News on TikTok. So check us out.
So why don't you tell us about the story that you were an editor on about the Bond Hotel?
Yeah, for sure. So one of our fantastic reporters, Rhea Singh, was working on this article for about 2 months. And basically, they were also given really similar access that you had, Kevin. So the Bond Place Hotel has been leased by the City of Toronto since April 2020 as a shelter. You know, through the pandemic, shelters across the city had to reduce their capacity by 50 or more than 50%. And so people had absolutely nowhere to go. And so in response, the city has leased all of these hotels across the GTA and turned them into shelters. And we've been hearing horror stories and receiving reports from people living in these shelters for a long time now. And so Rhea was on Twitter and she saw that the Bond Hotel, the Bond Place Hotel, residents at that shelter had actually created a Twitter account to share the horror stories that they've been going through over the last 2 years. And so Rhea contacted this Twitter page and ended up speaking to a resident named Jennifer Jewell, who's a very vocal and organized shelter resident at the Bond. She's an incredible person, as well as several other residents who shared that they are being served uncooked food, uncooked chicken. They're experiencing quote unquote wellness checks where Bond Place security will walk into their room like totally unannounced while they're undressed or in the bathroom or whatever. And obviously that's a very violating feeling for them. And then there was also a string of sexual assaults committed by a resident there that wasn't immediately handled by the hotel administration. I mean, I could go on and on. It just sounds like a hellscape. That's how they've described it. So you can read that on our website. One of our sources for that article, a resident named Graham Dring, very sadly passed away between his interview with Rhea and the publishing of that article. So we've dedicated that piece to him. So yeah, check it out on our website.
Thanks, Shannon. Yeah, again, like a very exemplary piece of work. Ray is a great reporter, and it takes a lot of time for people to trust you like that with something so sensitive. Like, it's where you live, and you don't feel safe. So what are you going to do? You want to go broadcast this? That's not, like, it takes a long time for somebody to trust you in that situation.
It's brave, too. It's brave for them to speak out against the administration.
Yeah. Like, that's where you are. It's not even your boss, you know? Like, it's you, like, that's where you live. You sleep there. So, yeah, I agree with you. It is brave to speak out like that. And it's important. So, moving on from the stories that we've been working on, there's other stuff that we've been doing, too. Like, we did a lot of provincial election coverage, which we'll get into in a moment. But one thing I want to say, because we're in a particular juncture at the Hoser in terms of our growth, is if you are a media worker, if you're a photographer, if you're somebody who's written short stories and you don't know how to do that nonfiction work, if you're somebody who does graphic design and you're like, I want to put my skills towards the press, I want to put my skills towards journalism, please pitch us, because for the rest of the year, we're going to be expanding and trying to take on a lot more projects than we have in the past year. And we would really like to hear from some of you. And also, like, even if you don't have a pitch, if you want to have a coffee, if you want to meet up with us, if you want to talk about what's going on, if you want a take on maybe you want to start your own thing or some of the difficulties of running something like what we're running, please reach out to us, because this has happened to me so many times that there's someone that I'll run into from journalism school or from the internship or any other thing that I did in the past few years related to journalism work. And they'll say, you know, we love what you guys are doing or whatever. And they don't necessarily have a story idea, but they want to talk to us about like the workings and maybe how they could contribute. So please reach out to us. We're just ordinary people who probably have like quite a bit in common with you if you're listening this far.
All right, guys, let's jump into this.
In just 33 days, when we fire .org, the next premier of Ontario, Andrea Horvath!
This time, everyday people need to win this election. This time, let's replace cuts with hope. Let's get out there. Bring Ontarians together and create a better life here for everyone. And in just 33 short days, this time, we'll fix what's broken once and for all.
So last month, we went to the ONDP's election kickoff campaign at Gage Park in Hamilton, where now outgoing party leader Andrea Horvath spoke to a crowd of about 200 to 300 supporters. Kevin spoke to Chris Glover, ONDP MPP for Spadina Fort York.
On your relationship with organized labor, obviously the NDP has a long history with this. How will you make it easier for non-union workers to unionize if you're elected into government?
Oh, you know, actually I was part of an organizing when I was teaching night school at the TDSB. I was actually helped QP 4400 organize that group because we had signed contracts in the TDSB was not honoring those contracts. So it's really important that we allow people to organize, and it's really important. Like, I come from a labor background. Everybody in my family worked at General Motors, and until our families, you know, General Motors was unionized, we were living in destitution. And then we got unionized and we, you know, got middle income wages. And so it's absolutely important that we provide the tools that people need in order to organize. And, you know, those are things like, you know, preventing scab workers taking over jobs.
Okay, so anti-scab legislation would be something on the agenda.
It's something that we'd be looking at.
Kathleen Wynne's Liberal government used strike breaking against college instructors very recently. I mean, in historical terms, 5 years ago. Doug Ford did it against students at graduate teachers at York University as soon as he was elected. Is your government going to be using strike-breaking legislation to mediate between labor and the employer?
You know, if both sides are negotiating in good faith, then there isn't any need for that. There isn't, you know, if both sides are negotiating in good faith, then there isn't usually a need for a strike, you know? So the best thing to do is get that back to the, you know, bargaining table, because that's where the deal is going to be hammered out anyways. So you might as well just push the bargaining table and make sure both sides are sitting down and making a deal.
Fair negotiation, for sure. We just spoke to one of your other candidates, and he said that he was committed to never using strike-breaking legislation. Are you saying that the Ontario NDP would use that as a tool if it came to that?
No, I didn't say that. No.
Lol. Anyway, over the month of May, we ended up reaching out to over 120 MPP candidates across the GTA. We asked people running for the Greens, the Liberals, the ONDP, and the PCs. Those are the four parties represented in Queen's Park, naturally. We sent them a list of 5 questions on issues that we thought our readers and our listeners are affected by most and care about a lot. Stuff like housing, wages, defunding the police, inflation, the pandemic.
We didn't hear from a single PC candidate. Not one. We emailed their comms team 3 times and they let us on this weird wild goose chase, telling us to email one comms email and not the other. The Greens, Libs, and ONDP all had very accessible contact information on their websites for each candidate, but the PCs didn't have anything. We reached out directly to a handful of incumbent PC MPPs, but didn't hear a peep.
We spoke to other journalists around the GTA and learned that they were having the same issue with the PCs. They could barely reach any of them.
And this apparent gag order seemed to work for their campaign. So let's jump into election numbers and break it down for you.
Our producer, Eric Wickham, and a member of the hilarious podcast Big Shiny Takes, is joining us for this section. Eric, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, you two. I'm a big fan of your work.
We're a big fan of your work, Eric.
Oh, stop.
We love you.
Yeah. There's an episode. Actually, I can't say that. A lot of your episodes I can't talk about.
No. Honestly, like, I'm really thrilled to be a part of this. And, I mean, I was here for when you were talking about the stories written this past month. And one, they're incredible, and everybody who hasn't read them should read them. But two, like, you guys are such, like, the real deal. Okay, so just for context for the listeners, we went to May Day together, right? And we were walking up University, and, like, every 5 feet, someone would wave at one of you two. Like, everybody knew you. And, like, when you start in media, the thing that, like, the professors always tell you is, like, hey, like, you got to become part of the community. And then, you know, people get their desk job at some large media organization, and then they never go outside ever again. They just, you know, rip stories off the wire and they move on. But, like, you two are there and everybody knows you, and the stories that you do are different because of it. And I'm a big fan of both of you, and I got an opportunity to be on your show. So I'm saying that you're great. But yeah, let's talk about the election, because no one's tired of hearing about the election.
Hell yeah.
Thank you for that, Eric. That was really, really sweet of you.
Yeah, that was really nice.
Yeah, I'm a nice guy. But yeah, election.
Yeah.
Went really good, right?
Went really well. It's like a record low turnout. I think that's the headline, like the biggest part of this. It's a record low turnout. In Ontario's mm-hmm. modern political history, there has not been such a low turnout ever. There's 10.7 million eligible voters in this province. So less than half of them voted. There were 4.6 million voters for the 4 parties.
Like, there's never been an exciting, like, an Ontario election where you're like, wow, this person's a real firebrand. They're really going to make this province better.
Yeah.
But, like, this specific election, I felt like the choices that were on the table for Ontarians to pick from, all of them were unappetizing. There was not a good choice. There was a least bad choice. And, like, that's not inspiring. And so I'm not surprised it was the worst voter turnout in Ontario history, personally.
Yeah. I think that there's something to be said about the effect of the hyperfixation of Canadians who follow politics on America. Like, the fact of the matter is, I think a lot of the opposition to Doug Ford was this sort of aesthetic synonymization between Trump and Ford. And they're not the same. Like, they do represent a lot of similar politics. But the Ford family is a machine politics family that never really gets credit for that. And they are very well entrenched. Similarly to Jason Kenney and Chris Alexander, those types of figures, they're the types of conservatives that are entrenched in racialized and working class communities that actually turn out for them on election day, because they do this rinky-dink crap of, like, I'm going to shovel the snow in front of your car, like Ford did on that video. But he's not going to fund snow shoveling services. Like, public services are not going to get money. But there's a moment there, right? And that's what people remember. People turn out for that. On the opposite side, there's nothing like that in the NDP, the Liberals, or the Greens, right? Like, Mike Schreiner has a very good reputation in his own riding. There's people in the NDP and the Liberals that have good reputations in their own riding. But as a party, they don't traffic in that same presentation of, like, I'm the guy who's going to fix the thing for you. That's a very simple message that Trump and Ford both had. Now, when you got Trump gone from 2020 to 2022, I think there's something to be said about the people who were really engaged with politics prior to his departure, who stopped paying attention and stopped wanting to vote. There's a million different reasons why people don't vote, but I do think that there's some effect there.
Yeah, I mean, just going back to extremely low voter turnout, BC's got 40% of the popular vote, but they only received about 18% of all eligible votes across the province. So just shy of 2 million people voted for the BCs. And they gained 7 seats, but they also had 400,000 less votes than they did in 2018. And the NDP received 800,000 fewer votes than they did in 2018, which is wild.
Yeah, that's enormous. That's enormous, and it's undeniable. And I must say, I sat in on early pandemic organizing meetings that some labor groups that are affiliated with the Ontario Federation of Labor were having. And there really was sort of like a feeling of divide. A lot of the activists and organizers in the room were like, we need to do something today. Like, people are dying. We need to do something now. And the chat was like filling up with those kinds of comments because they had multiple speakers and some of them were very good. But there was one representative in labor who was basically just saying, like, the NDP is the government in waiting and let's do everything we can to get them elected. And meanwhile, there's people in the chat saying, rightly, we need to do something today because people are dying.
Yeah.
That is a recipe for lack of morale. That is a recipe for an absence of excitement, as you were saying, Eric. That is a recipe for people not wanting to turn out because the bleeding edge of trying to make the world better in official politics is basically like, let's sit on our hands while we suffer until the election.
Mm-hmm.
And it's obviously it's the opposite of deep organizing or connecting with community or trying to use a political office as some sort of center of organizing. One area where this has actually been quite the opposite, and I think people need to pay attention to, and I'll give a shout out to Sandy and Nora Talk Politics because they mentioned this on their episode a couple of weeks ago, their episode about the Ontario election. Joel Hardin, who is one of the most radical NDP MPPs and was one of the first people to say on election night, we need new leadership after it was clear that they had lost again. He has a reputation for really good constituent services, like the people in his office get back to the people in his riding very, very often. And he came from this sort of like big organizing Bernie model. Like, I was there back in 2018 at their convention when Hardin was starting out with the Ginger Group in Ottawa, which is sort of like a democratic socialist organizing group. And the party had another candidate that they had wanted to win. Joel won like fair and square. And, you know, now he's an MPP. But his vote share increased. He got, according to the podcast episode, Sandy and Nora, he got over 30,000 votes, which I believe, as they said, is the most votes of any MPP in Ontario. And look, like I mentioned Mike Schreiner earlier as well. Schreiner is very popular in Guelph, right? So it's not surprising that those people, specific people, like one seat is exciting people such that the people in that community are turning out more than they did last time. But the majority of the province is the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
As a 30-year-old, I hope that one day I will not look at Ontario politics with like a sense of like dread and foreboding of like, oh, all of these candidates suck. All like, and like, that's reductive. I do feel like that's unfair. Like, I actually quite like my MPP here. I think Joel Hardin is also very cool. But the leaders of these parties were all awful. And like, Del Duca got quite quickly. I mean, he was that gif of Grandpa Simpson, like walking in, seeing Bart taking off his hat and then grabbing his hat off the hat rack and then walking right back out. Like, that was his political career as the leader of the Liberal Party in Ontario. Like, and Horvath was the opposite of that, where she just wouldn't go.
Yeah. It's incredible to me that she was party leader since Obama's first election in 2008. That's wild.
All she did was lose. Like, she just stacked L's.
No matter what.
For her entire... Yeah. Yeah. It's like she's the opposite of DJ Khaled. And like, that's sad.
Yeah. We not the best.
We the second best. Which apparently counts as a victory if you check certain partisan Twitter accounts the day after the election. It was horrible to watch. But good on you, Andrea. Thank you for coming out. But like, it was time to go before this election. And I think everybody knew that. And nothing changed. And much like your story before, Kevin, about people going, we need to do something now. And then everybody going, like, let's wait it out. and not do something now, we are now stuck with a Doug Ford majority in Ontario for another 4 years. 4 years. Dougie. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Getting it done.
At least we have progressive leadership at City Hall in Toronto. So moving on from provincial electoral politics, I wanted to talk a little bit about municipal electoral politics. There's going to be a city council race in Toronto where we are currently sitting this fall. So obviously not all of the candidates have declared yet. There's not campaign websites for everybody who's involved, but I did want to highlight a few people. I just want to be really clear for the listeners. These are not endorsements. These are people that I've seen in different social movement settings or online putting out campaign materials already. So I just wanted to highlight a few. Chiara Padovani is one of them. So Chiara, she's going to be running in York South Weston. Padovani is somebody that I've known or been aware of in Toronto for maybe 5 or so years. She's involved in a lot of different social movements, including like public transit advocacy, tenant organizing, 15 and Fairness, which is now Justice for Workers. And she was also in South America doing feminist human rights organizing for like 6 years. I saw on her campaign website, which is very fascinating. She works at the North York Harvest Food Bank. Another person whose materials I've also seen and has also been around a lot of the social movements that I've seen over the past few years here is Shaker Jamal. I see photos of him online at various demonstrations, including the grassroots defense of Tim Hortons workers against attacks from the company's owners in the winter of 2018, listeners might remember. He's also listed on LinkedIn as a staff rep for the United Steelworkers. And Jamal's running to represent Davenport in this fall's election, where Anna Bailao is currently the city councilor, but she's not running again. Another person I wanted to highlight, just the last one, is Saran Gebrselassie. People will probably remember that she ran for mayor in 2018 as well. Gebrselassie is actually somebody that I ran into on July 21st last year when there was all that police violence at 14 Division. Listeners can check out our story on that on our website. But yeah, she was outside before a lot of the police violence happened. I think she might have been there during as well. We got to talking, and anyway, I was asking her if she's going to be running again, and she said yes. And this was last July. She said yes, and she said that they were already starting to get a campaign team organized on the ground. I haven't seen anything like a campaign website or anything like that, so I'm not entirely sure that she's running. But I wanted to highlight this because it speaks to another sort of dynamic in Toronto that I don't think we really confront, honestly. There's an impression among a lot of the residents of this city that Toronto is somewhat of a center-left, progressive, nice place to live. There's a lot of great things about this city. I mean, I do love this city quite a lot. But Gebrselassie ran on a pretty left-wing platform in 2018, and she came in fourth. And the reason that she came in fourth, people will remember John Tory was elected. Jennifer Keesmaat was sort of the liberal opponent. And there were a lot of other people running. Gebrselassie did not come in third. She came in fourth because the far-right extremist Faith Goldie came in third. Faith Goldie got 25,000 votes to Gebrselassie's 15,000. And next door in Mississauga, Kevin J. Johnson, who has been in court for the racist shit that he's done, came in second with 13% of the vote. So Toronto, the greater Toronto area, there's a lot of great things in here, but when it comes to electoral politics, it's not the best. Somebody who has said the neo-Nazi 14 words on a podcast and was such an extremist that she alienated rebel media to the point where they fired her, somebody like that coming in third should have been a real wake-up call to people in the city 4 years ago, and we'll see what happens this fall, but it's going to be fascinating.
So we've got some pretty big plans to cover the municipal election over the late summer, early fall. We are hoping to do sort of a similar strategy that we did with the provincial election, where we'll reach out to all of the most prominent candidates and ask them a series of questions on housing and defunding the police and pandemic relief and issues that are important to our readers and listeners. We're hoping to establish a pretty good team of journalists to tackle this. The door is open. If you are interested in doing election coverage for us, please send us a pitch to editor@thehoser.ca. We're also looking for photographers. So yeah, give us a ring.
Definitely. And I also want to say there's probably people listening who are the exact type of people that we should be working with, who are embedded in communities where there's stories that are not being reported on. And that's where exciting stuff comes out of. Yeah. Like the people that are actual, like on the ground grassroots organizers who come out of that space and decide to jump into electoral politics are usually the only people who are actually exciting in any way, shape or form. So if you're the type of person listening to this and you're like, oh, I know somebody who's probably going to run, get in touch with us because these are the types of things that we want to dig up. And it's a lot more personal and immediate and local when we're doing this through people as opposed to doing it through some like communications party structure. It's just much easier for us to do a good job with this. So please like hit us up and yeah, we'll look forward to meeting you.
Thanks for listening to this episode. We're sorry that it took us so long to get another one out, and we promise it won't happen again, at least for a while. We covered a lot here. You can check out both of those articles that we mentioned by Kevin and by Rhea Singh on our website.
Yeah, thanks so much, folks. We really appreciate the support. And a little personal note, I had my convocation yesterday. I graduated a couple years ago, but there's a lot of celebration happening. So listeners, hit me up in the DMs, Instagram, Twitter, anything. Just say like, congratulations on your graduation. And I probably won't ignore you.
And a big, huge thank you for our wonderful producer, Eric Wickham, for joining us today.
Again, thank you for having me. It's a lot of fun to be on the show rather than sitting quietly listening to you talk, which I do for every other episode so far.
Well, we appreciate everything that you do. And go check out Big Shiny Takes, part of the Harbinger Media Network. And you can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you like the work that we do and you want to support us online, please check out patreon.com/thehosermedia. We'd love your support whenever you can jump on there. And we will probably be implementing an even simpler payment system in the near future. But check us out.
Yeah, and a huge thank you to all of the wonderful and generous Hoser patrons that have been with us since the beginning and beyond. We are extremely appreciative of all of the support that you've given us, and we couldn't do this work without you. Good night.
Good night.
That's a spicy meatball. I think that's good. Thanks.